Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, welcome to my latest venture. My name is Jasmine Ortiz, and this is my first time ever really getting into the podcasting world. I have recently inked a joint venture with 99.7 The Heat Miami, officially syndicated by iHeartRadio, to launch The Jasmine Ortiz Show. And I'm super excited to be here with you all to talk about a variety of topics that matter to me, that matter to you guys as my audience, things ranging from mental health, body image, current events, makeup, wellness, where to go, what to do in Miami, and how to survive your 20s in a big city. This is a topic in and of itself that has a lot to unpack here. So I'm so excited to get into it. I am an independent recording artist living in Miami, Florida. I went to University of Miami for modern artist development, and I have a lot of variety of experiences personally with a lot of the topics that we're going to get into. So a little bit about why I started this platform. I wanted to create a space where like-minded individuals could feel supported, where young women could feel like they have a place to turn with someone like them who can provide advice, insight, even career direction, and feel like they're not alone in the struggles that we all go through in our early 20s. Definitely feel like that's something not talked about a lot in general, because your early 20s can be so glamorized. But, you know, as much as I want to romanticize my life, things are happening, and things we need to talk about are happening. So without further ado, I would like to introduce my lovely co-host and one of my best friends from college, Jordy Polycarp. Hey, Jordy.
Super excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Jasmine. Yeah, it's nice to talk to you guys. I'm an alternative R&B artist from NYC, Queens born. Been making music since 2015. And super excited to talk to you guys about the music industry and body image and social media and all of the above.
Yes, I am so excited to be doing this with one of my closest friends, because it's so special to have that unique connection when you're talking about these topics, because I want you guys to feel like you're just here chatting with your best friends in the group chat, on FaceTime, you know, getting that advice that you need to get, right? That's what this is about. And through this platform on the show, I also want to provide lifestyle advice, direction on what restaurants to go to, cool things to check out in Miami, and again, navigating that city life. I'm going to be launching the Keep It Jasmine lifestyle brand to give you access to all of these different things, and that's something we're also going to feature here on the show. All right, let's get into it, Jordy. So first things first, let's talk about some current events. A huge aspect of all of our lives as Gen Zers, or Zillennials, I think we're called, because we're kind of on the cusp.
Oh my God.
Is social media.
Makes you feel old.
I know. Let's not talk about it. It's okay. Is social media. So TikTok, especially since 2020, since the pandemic, has become the number one platform globally for sharing content. Now the US government has decided to enact a ban on this application because of its origins from a Chinese company called ByteDance. So if ByteDance does not sell TikTok to an American-based media company within the allocated period of time, we can't use it anymore in the US. That's mind-blowing to me, first of all, because I mean, it's violating so much about the First Amendment and about our freedom of choice in how we consume media and how we interact with each other. But I also think this is completely unprecedented because never before have we had so much access to an internationally controlled form of media. I mean, prior to the past 15 years, social media wasn't a concept and cybersecurity wasn't really a heavily governed concept. So the fact that these two things are coinciding in such a way, especially when it comes to like international relations, how is that going to impact, you know, our rights as individual Americans to choose the platforms that we want to engage on? I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I don't know why we're pretending like TikTok isn't just another like import, basically. Like, it's not like we don't have relationships with other countries and like using their products. And I think TikTok is just an extension of that. But this time it doesn't benefit like people trying to gatekeep information and things like that. Like, I think unfortunately for them, but fortunately for us, we've managed to turn the platform into like not just like a little like dance thing, but we're genuinely sharing information and like having a good time with it and using it for a lot of different things. But I think that the intent behind trying to ban it is mostly racist and xenophobic and isn't actually protecting us from anything. It's not like there's not other apps and companies also kind of mining our data or trying to. I don't think I care that much if they're using my data. So far it's been helpful, but you know, I hope this ban doesn't actually happen, and I don't think most of the population using it wants that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something really important that you said was about data mining. I mean, huge conglomerates in the US, such as Meta, also do that. And we actively use Facebook and Instagram without batting an eye. Personally, I understand the desire to increase cybersecurity 100%. I also understand the desire to not allow people to profit off your personal data. If it's just what you're clicking on and what advertising dollars could be useful based on like your preferences, I kind of think that's just the nature of being on the internet, you know? And unfortunately, this can drive consumerism, but I think it's also encouraging higher levels of internet literacy and kind of forcing people to vet the products that they're going to purchase and try to be mindful about that. I think the TikTok ban is overwhelmingly unnecessary. I think it could lead to issues with censorship from a government perspective moving forward because so many people use TikTok as a way to share current events and news as they're happening in real time. I don't know of a single other outlet except maybe Twitter/X that allows you to see updates as quickly as TikTok does. Now, on the flip side of it, I kind of do see an argument from an intellectual perspective of, is TikTok damaging kids' attention spans? And is it giving them false expectations of the lifestyles or products they need to be emulating? And that's another part of the conversation altogether.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, it's a huge part of like social media as a whole. But I think it also manages to like make people who feel like they're trying to fit in these different like aesthetics or trying to figure out what they want to look like or put their money towards to find community in that way as well. Like, I think there will always be aspects of social media that are potentially damaging in that way. But I think we should be teaching ourselves, the younger generations, as they're coming into this kind of world, social media literacy and just sort of learning that not everything that you're seeing is what you should be doing or how you should be feeling. Still kind of build your own sense of self-worth and individuality at the same time.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few weeks and months with this. Mm-hmm. So another thing that has been trending lately and trending honestly for way too long is Ariana Grande's personal life and her recent release. So I've always been an Ariana Grande stan. Like, I love her music. I have always been a huge fan of it. But there's a lot to be said about, you know, the drama that's kind of surrounded her life in the past year, and how her album has benefit and kind of had some negative impacts from that as well. First of all, starting with the Yes And track, that was her first single off the album, and very kind of cheekily addressing the rumors or allegations of, you know, kind of home wrecking another relationship between her partner Ethan Slater and his ex-wife Lily J. What are your thoughts on this? You know, we don't know these people. We can speak from a very subjective point of view because we don't have all the information. But from what the public's perspective has been, it's not looking good right now.
It's not looking good for her. I will say, I also have been an Ariana Grande fan for a while. She can do no wrong. Like, obviously she can, but I support women's rights and I support women's rights.
And wrongs.
And I think a hard part of it too is because of, like, the social media train, we tend to uplift and put these celebrities and artists on a pedestal. And then when they do things that I've seen other normal, regular people do in their life, it somehow feels worse and they get demonized and canceled and things like that. Now, again, I'm not condoning cheating or home wrecking. I think as an adult woman, as an adult person, you should know better. But also, it's alleged, right? There's a lot of this that hasn't really been confirmed, and like interviews and things like that that I've seen, screenshots. But overall, I think the music is good. Like, I think we can separate the two a little bit sometimes. And especially, like, people have talked a lot about how Eternal Sunshine is supposed to be based on the movie, right? So there's a lot of through lines of the album that aren't her necessarily speaking verbatim of her experience, but also following a little bit of the actual storyline of, what is it, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Yeah, and also that was Mac Miller's favorite film. So that has a lot to do with the messaging behind the album too. Like, We Can't Be Friends, that song specifically, really is like a gut punch for anyone who listens to it and anyone who's had sort of that nostalgic longing for an ex-partner. And that just goes even more in depth when that person has unfortunately passed away. So for Ariana, I can only imagine that that pain never really goes away because you can't get closure from someone you can't speak to again. So this song is really her way of forcing herself to say goodbye, forcing herself to acknowledge, like, we can never be friends again for many reasons. And then, you know, kind of extracting her emotions from that. So I think it goes far beyond her, you know, marriage with Dalton and her new relationship with Ethan. I think it goes so much further back into the things she struggled with for the past 5-6 years, where between her engagement to Pete Davidson, passing away of a very important ex of hers, into, you know, all this whirlwind marriage during the pandemic, I don't think the girls had a chance to breathe.
Exactly.
You know, and to be alone and heal, because it's realistically been like the past 6 years of that same kind of pattern. I can only imagine how difficult it is to separate the feelings that she had about one ex and one relationship kind of ending with the next one, especially because it's a marriage and especially because, you know, we all know how much that meant to her as a step to take. And then to find out that Dalton was allegedly cheating is just like a whole other layer to this. Although I still think it does not necessarily, you know, excuse the fact that Ethan was also like married with a newborn child. Like, that is a whole other layer too.
Yeah, that's a whole other can of worms. You know, I think especially it's a lot harder when, so not only is she a normal human being going through this stuff, but then also all of it's online. Everyone's bringing up her past relationships even way before this. Like, I don't know how many articles I found on Ariana Grande's relationship timeline of like a decade or more, which is a little bit insane when you have everybody kind of like picking apart who you are and who you've been. And then at the same time, you have to make music about it, right? Like, she's an artist with a contract and she's writing from her personal experience. And then she's also having to relive that as she's like really going through it with her work. I am a huge Mac Miller fan as well. And with how much like his passing rocked the music community, I can only imagine the kind of like romantic damage and like emotional damage that does afterwards. She hasn't had a moment to catch her breath. Again, not condoning their actions, allegedly. I just think she deserves a minute. And the music is good. Like, I connect Same. With it. I understand it.
Absolutely. And I think there's also a bit of a double standard here with how people are looking at her and penalizing her versus how they're looking at Ethan. I know that there's a lot of, you know, anger and vitriol against him as well, but because of her status, as how huge she is as a public figure and as a superstar, really, she's taking the brunt of this damage, even though it takes two people to make that decision. And ultimately, the person with a newborn child was not her. She came in there like a big bad wolf and like did all this damage, but no, he had to be there as an adult and make that choice for himself. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that she deserves some grace and some privacy, because that can't be easy to go through as a woman, much less in the public eye.
And especially I saw like people talking about they may or may not have broken up, and then all of the comments being like, she made him break up with his wife just to break up with him. Immediately, there's so much blame. Like, that's totally unfounded. She is the only one who made choices. Everything is her fault. Is such a double standard.
100%. I agree. And one more current event. Actually, also very sad and unnerving, because it has to do with a lot of media that we consumed when we were younger. The Quiet on Set docu-series that came out about what really went on behind the scenes in Nickelodeon in the early 2000s. Everywhere from Victorious through iCarly, all of those casts of those shows and their interactions with Dan Schneider. Now, I haven't seen exactly what the allegations are or exactly what the details are in the show, but I think in general this leads to a conversation of how are child actors, child performers being protected? How is this, you know, commercialization of their experiences impacting them? And I think we've seen a lot of people come out and talk about that, especially Miley Cyrus on the Disney end of it.
Yeah, I think from what I understand of what I saw, it was a lot of the executives and like directors and things like that who were in very close contact with these child actors from the show who were potentially abusing them. And I think it really perpetuates this cycle of using kid actors and feeling like we like adultify them a little bit. It feels like all of these little subliminal things that were in the shows that we watched, especially when it came to Nickelodeon and certain episodes of Victorious that I remember like watching and then going back to them and seeing that it's weird. And even down to like Liz Gillies and her husband and them having met when she was 17 on the set of Victorious. It happens all the time. And I feel like the entertainment industry needs to do a better job overall of protecting their stars. If you're going to be making money off of these kids, they deserve protection and respect.
I actually read Jeanette McCurdy's kind of autobiography. That book was so impactful for me to listen to. I also grew up in the entertainment industry. I started acting when I was 5, and I was very, you know, luckily protected by my mom because she would go with me to auditions in New York. And I had none of these negative experiences, right? But I also think it has to do with the ratio of how much you're being exposed and to how many people. And for Jeanette, for example, I mean, she was on iCarly and auditioning for it from the time she was 11 or 12 all the way until she was 18 or 19. She was very much subjected to a lot of abusive scenarios. So if you're taking children out of homes that are not necessarily supportive and then putting them into these vulnerable situations with adults who ultimately just want to commodify them, nothing good is going to come out of that situation. So I really feel for Jeanette, and I admire how she's been willing to tell her story in the past few years. I find it incredibly inspirational that she's been able to overcome everything that she went through and now is remaking herself completely as an adult.
I definitely agree. I think it's a really sad thing that as adults now they have to deal with that on their own. I think especially like being a kid in that environment, you don't get to be around other kids who are not doing that most of the time, like being homeschooled and having to travel and like your family moving so you can be on set and things like that. I always think about how like I just started entering the music industry really in a serious way. And I think if I had been 15, 16 or like 12, 13, and I like did some of the like Disney auditions and stuff when I was younger. But I think if I had been put in that environment, I don't think I'd be the same person.
Well, you know what? That is a super important conversation to have. And I hope that everyone who's been in that situation is healing from that time period and really moving forward. From there, I do also want to go into our topic of the day. And our topic of the day is also very important to both of us. It's body image. So really quick, before we go in depth on that topic, I want to hear a quick break from one of our sponsors.
Have you ever wanted to make some extra cash while also reducing your impact on the environment? Depop is a great way to do both. It provides a sustainable way to shop fun fashion trends while also being able to resell your old clothing you no longer want or use. What's old is new. With 20-year fashion cycles coming back in full force and old trends from the 2000s and 2010s coming back into style, Depop is the place to go to get authentic vintage looks to make sure that you're on top of your fashion game. Depop encourages users to assess their own consumption habits, and instead of shopping from that latest fast fashion brand, you can find almost any item that you may want or need right here on Depop. Depop is a great platform for sellers too. They offer a competitive rate of requiring only a 10% commission for using the platform, whereas competitor apps can take up to 20% from your final sale price. There are safeguards in place to protect shoppers and sellers from fraud on both ends. Don't let that pile of clothes you don't want haunt you anymore. Start uploading to Depop today and give your clothes a chance at a new life. It's as easy as opening the app, taking a few pictures, writing out your caption, and choosing your list price. Depop helps you every step of the way to make your final sale. This is Jasmine Ortiz on 99.7 The Heat Miami, officially a part of iHeartRadio. Now, let's get back to our regular scheduled programming.
Let's get back into it. Our topic of the day is body image, and you're listening to 99.7 The Heat Miami, The Jasmine Ortiz Show. You're here with Jasmine Ortiz and Jordy Polycarp. Now, this topic has so much of a personal connotation for both of us. Having grown up in the early 2000s, even with what we were just talking about, with a lot of the media that we consumed, and now moving into young adulthood and adulthood with social media, that has completely altered fundamentally how we looked at ourselves and the relationship we had with our bodies as young women. Almost every single young woman or femme-presenting person that I know has struggled deeply with body image. Whether or not they fit the beauty standards, there is always some facet of themselves that they wish they could improve or that they're comparing to other people. For me personally, my journey as an independent artist was, you know, heavily involved with my body image because I had to really come to terms with the fact that I would be on camera in ways that I couldn't necessarily control all the time. If I'm shooting a music video or if I'm doing a photo shoot, I can't always control what the videographer or photographer is capturing, right? I can't always control the lighting or how I look from certain angles or how my body is presenting on camera. And you look different on camera than you do in a mirror. That's just the truth. I don't know what weird camera magic happens. Someone needs to explain this to me. But why is it that when you're on camera, you do not look how you look with your own eyes in a mirror? Like, I cannot explain it. So I had to confront a lot of the insecurities that I held and the beliefs that I held about my own self-worth when it came to body image in my artist journey. I remember growing up in the early 2000s when that very, very thin, like supermodel was very much the norm and the standard that people wanted to emulate. And I never have once in my life fit that body type. I developed fairly young in middle school, and I always kind of felt like I was completely a different body type from the other girls that I was around. I always felt a little bit bigger. I always felt a little bit curvier. And that was, you know, before any of those things were really idolized, right? It was more like, do these jeans make my butt look big in a bad way? Like, that was the joke in the 2000s. Like, and it's the worst thing in the world if someone says yes. So that's like the rhetoric I was exposed to as a kid. That's always what I internalized. So then as I, you know, went through puberty as a young girl, I felt awful about myself. I was like, why are these things changing, you know, faster than my peers? Why are these things changing in a way that I can't control? And all of a sudden I looked in the mirror and I feel like I didn't even recognize myself. So it took a really long time, I think end of high school and all of college, to really come to a point where I feel better. I won't even say 100% amazing, but better and okay presenting myself and being vulnerable on camera and as an artist. And I'm sure you have a similar experience, Jordy, also as an independent artist and also as a curvier person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of similar experiences in this way, especially like for me as well, like being a Caribbean woman and coming from a Haitian immigrant family, the difference in that kind of culture and how we see body type and health and things like that versus Western society's kind of idea of what that should look like and how to talk about it was a very interesting thing for me growing up. That, like, does my butt look big thing, I knew not even to ask when I was a kid. I was like, I'm not even gonna bother, because it was, and it always has been. And like now I'm like, oh, yes, like now I'm happy yes. about it. But like it's crazy thinking about how those standards change and the ways that they change. And especially nowadays, like, we can't catch a break. Like now it's like, have a big butt, but it has to be the BBL kind, or like the super like muscly kind. And before that it was don't have one at all. And like, I feel like there's been so many brands and companies and ad campaigns that are feeding off of women's insecurities, because they know that the only way to get us to keep buying things is to convince us that we need them in order to look a certain way and that we should look that way. As an artist as well, nowadays, especially as I'm like getting back into releasing music and rebranding and things like that, body image and in particular body neutrality is something that I've been working on and has been really important for everything I've been doing lately, because especially as a Black woman and a bigger bodied Black woman, like, I also developed really young, and it was always seeing women with my body type were either hypersexualized in like really gross, uncomfortable ways, or they were immediately maternal and like non-sexual beings, or like mammies and things like that. Either way, our bodies were still being used for a purpose that was never like personal fulfillment or pleasure or joy, but it was always, what can somebody else gain from my body in a bunch of different ways? So I think, yeah, even nowadays, I'm glad at least that, you know, the kinds of brands that are using more plus size models and a variation of plus size models, because even still there was like a right way to be plus sized for a second as well. And now I'm seeing a lot more variety and different types of women and body types and sizes all across, at least where I shop nowadays and on my social media feeds. So I do feel like at least we're getting somewhere, but I feel like the early 2000s were a pitfall for any young girl or woman trying to figure out how to feel comfortable with their bodies.
Everything that you said kind of gave me chills, because you expressed it in a way that is so deeply personal and also so poignant for other people listening. And I think a lot of people will relate, because I also felt like everyone who was supposed to represent me, anyone who was a Latina individual in media in the early 2000s, was very much hypersexualized and very much serving a purpose for the plot or as a token character for the, you know, sexual interest of another non-Latin character. And that definitely had an impact on me because I genuinely never felt represented as a main character, as a quote unquote normal character with plot development in any media growing up. And it just wasn't a thing. And that's gotten better over the years, 100%, but we're still not at a place where it's normalized. And I think Latinos in general kind of fall into this weird middle ground because we come in all shapes, sizes, colors, because, you know, as an ethnicity, we have all races. And that spectrum is so beautiful, but I feel like only one kind of like characterization or caricature of what Latinidad really means was represented in the media at that point. One piece of media that I felt really represented in was Wednesday. And I think Wednesday was such a step in the right direction, especially for me, because I felt like Wednesday being Latina was a part of her identity, but it wasn't everything that drove her as a character. She still had her own, you know, goth identity. She was very much the Wednesday character, but she also wasn't shying away from her Latinidad. And her dad, Gomez, is obviously very proudly a Latino man. But it's interesting because that literally felt like my family dynamic, weirdly enough, even though it's the Addams family. It felt like a Latina girl who grew up in the U.S., probably maybe bilingual like me, but also not fitting the stereotypes that a lot of people want to attribute to us. And it shows that Latino characters can be quote unquote like normal characters. It doesn't have to be a stereotype. I feel like so often, you know, people of color in media are put under one umbrella where if you're not struggling as like an underdog in a story, you're not going to be featured, period. Like, yeah. Where are the people who are like successful main characters in media that are minorities? Like, you don't see that a lot. Mm-hmm. And that really hurts because while the struggle is so there and that's so real, and especially as a woman with immigrant parents, like, that is real, right? That's important to talk about. But when that becomes the only way you ever see yourself represented as someone who's struggling, you don't even see the potential for success.
Yeah. I totally understand that. I love that was so, like, you could connect to it so much, even as, like, an adult woman, because it's this kind of thing that we should have been seeing since childhood. Like, I remember, I think the first time I ever saw a plus-size woman, and she's not of color, from what I understand, but being respected and adored in the ways that I think all plus size women deserve to be, but so rarely are, was Ashley Graham at the time that she was kind of blowing up as like the plus size model. And I think she was the first one for Victoria's Secret or something like that. Mm-hmm. But also she was featured in the music video Toothbrush by Joe Jonas's band DNCE. And to this day, I'm pretty sure it's one of the only mainstream like pop music videos where the love interest is a plus-size woman. And, like, every time I watch it, it still gives me chills. And obviously, like, other countries, especially, like, other, like, artists from Caribbean countries and African countries have been doing that for a while. But it wasn't necessarily as much in the mainstream, and especially in Western society. But the ways that, like, they show her back rolls and, like, I think at some point she like picks a wedgie or something, which like if you have a big butt, you know that that's a consistent struggle. But like, yeah, it's not like gross or like uncomfortable. It's like cute and like very like extremely normal. Whereas like I feel like the kind of media I was seeing for when I was younger was like, there's another movie called Good Luck Chuck, where that guy who like any woman who is intimate with him immediately finds the person they're going to marry right after, and like he gets famous for it. And one of the women that he ends up doing that with is his like coworker who is a plus size Black woman, and the ways that she is the butt of the joke the entire movie is that, of course, she's like, quote unquote, she's undesirable. Of course, she's not married. Of course, no man would ever want to be with her, that she's so desperate to find someone that she has to get with Chuck in order for that to happen. And like, him doing that action is so, quote unquote, like, selfless and brave when like his friends, who he tells, are like disgusted by it. And watching that,
I've never seen that. I'm actually appalled. I've never seen this movie.
It was appalling. And I had never seen it when I was younger. I think it's from like mid early 2000s. And watching it as an adult, I was like, this woman looks like women I know. This woman looks like my friends. This woman looks like me. And
that's horrible.
Like, it's and that was the consistent imaging, like the consistent messaging that we were getting. And so, to move away from that, I'm glad that at least nowadays it feels a little bit different. But even still, like, I want to see plus size women as the love interest and not have any jokes about how much she eats, or her going to the doctor and them telling her to lose weight, or her not being able to get her jeans up and things like that. Like, I would love to just see a plus size woman be adored and respected and loved and have three-dimensional plots and dreams and aspirations, just like everybody else, especially a woman of color.
Absolutely. And that's exactly how I felt with Latino characters. Like, just representation in general matters so much, whether it's race, ethnicity, body type, sexuality. That matters because, like you said, three-dimensional characters. That element was always missing for me, and I'm sure for you as well. Like, making it the butt of the joke what your identity is not cool. For example, like, Latino characters oftentimes in like 2000s rom-coms were like the maid. I mean, look at J-Lo and Made in Manhattan, quite literally. And I love that movie for like nostalgia purposes, and I love J-Lo. Like, J-Lo can do no wrong. But at the same time, it's like despicable that almost all the characters I saw growing up as Latinos were like nannies or maids, or they were like these abuela types who like could not be sexualized. If you're young and in your 20s, you have a thick accent and you're hypersexualized. And then if you're an older woman, you cannot be sexualized whatsoever. You are, again, like what you were saying, completely maternal. So I feel like that middle ground is finally being developed and discovered with these characters, but there's still a lot of room to grow. All right, we're going to get way deeper into the topic of body image as well later on. But right now, I want to hear from one of our sponsors. Gotta pay those bills, girl. You know how it is. So we're gonna hear from them.
Have you been looking for a makeup brand that values skincare as much as you do? No need to look any longer. GLOSSIER.com. That was GLOSSIER.com. Glossier is a makeup brand that offers a wide variety of products, all the way from gentle skincare to refined makeup. Some of my favorites to use every day include the Milk Jelly Cleanser, Lash Stick, After Balm, and the Boy Brow and Brow Flick Duo, especially because it comes with a brow pomade and a microfine detailing pen. I bought this combination together because I love filling in my eyebrows. I personally feel like if I have any makeup on my face, it's either going to be eyelashes, eyebrows, or both, especially if I'm going for a natural look, which Glossier is really well known for. This is Jasmine Ortiz on 99.7 The Heat Miami, officially a part of iHeartRadio. Another great product for that natural clean girl aesthetic is the Future Dew Serum. The reason I love Future Dew is because it is so versatile. You can use it as a highlighter, you can use it on top of your moisturizer, under your foundation, even as the only thing on your skin if you just want to have a quick glowy look. Another thing I love about Glossier is how inclusive they are as a brand. They have a wide variety of skin tones available in their concealers and in their foundations. Another thing that they're really great at is their lip products. I cannot emphasize this enough, but I am absolutely obsessed with Balm.com. I have 8 different flavors of Balm.com. My favorites are the Lavender, Rose, Birthday Cake, and Original. I think it is one of the best lip balms on the market, and you absolutely need it in your purse right now. Next up, we're getting back to our regular scheduled programming on 99.7 The Heat Miami, officially on iHeartRadio.
Let's get back into it. This next segment is actually probably going to be my favorite in the whole show. This is our first episode, so we have a lot more to come. But today, on our Uncut Diamond segment, where we interview upcoming independent artists, upcoming individuals who have a lot to say with their artistry, we are going to be interviewing the one and only Jordi Polycarp. This independent artist actually happens to also be my co-host, but she is an incredibly talented, up-and-coming alternative R&B artist out of Queens, New York. And I'm super excited for her to share a lot more about her journey, her background, her experiences, and, you know, what is important to her through her artistry. So, Jordi, I'd like you to introduce yourself a bit as an artist.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm super excited to be on and talking to you guys about all this stuff. So yeah, thank you for the introduction. I'm alternative R&B artist. I'm from NYC, born and raised, and I've been making music seriously since 2015. Love and life and body image and family is really what I love writing about and talking about. So this is exactly in my vein. So love it. And I got some new music coming out soon. So super excited to be
here. Awesome. So I just want to talk a little bit about your background some more. So as I said before, Jordi's one of my best friends from college. We both graduated from the Frost School of Music at University of Miami. But I also wanted to talk about Go Canes. Yes. I want to talk about what got you into music and what your journey has been like from childhood or whenever you started out to now.
Yeah. So my journey through music, I can probably blame like three or four people. My sister, my dad, Alicia Keys, and Hayley Williams from Paramore. And I think if those four people did not exist in my life how they do, I would not be where I am right now. I think that my dad got me into music in the first place, and my family has always, like, music has been a huge part of our, like, social gatherings and things like that. And he put me and my sister into piano lessons when we were super young. We both started when we were three, and she's a couple years older than me. And I just wanted to be like her, and I was just poking at the keys for a while before I figured it out. But she also had a purple iPod Nano. Do you remember those?
Yes, I had an iPod Nano also. Yeah. And it was purple. Yeah, now I think about it. It was purple.
Yeah. She had a purple iPod Nano. And she used to let me borrow it to go to school sometimes if I asked her really early in the morning before she left for school. And then I would get on the bus after if I could use it. And it's how I started sharing music with my friends and listening to music. And is also how I found Paramore and Hayley Williams. And I remember I saw the music video for Ignorance by Paramore. And I was like, and she was like singing into this like swinging light bulb. And I was like, whatever that is, I want to do that. Like, this looks insane. And however I can, I'm going to do that. And the rest was kind of history. And Alicia
Keys.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. Her first album is all I heard in the car, in my mom's car, growing up. So that's kind of how I got into it. And then learning guitar in middle school and also starting to songwrite when I picked up a guitar was the sort of catalyst for everything that I do now and being able to come up with my own sound. And then I also started producing on GarageBand on my phone on like the train commute to school and like figuring out how that worked. And then eventually ending up at Frost with Jasmine and having the best time ever. And here we are.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's so funny because that purple iPod Nano was also the beginning of my musification, or I guess music education, because I got it from my uncle, and he had all these alternative like rock bands from the early 2000s on there. I mean, from, I guess, alternative indie, alternative rock, like think Hoobastank and like the script and like all those vibes. And then we also had Nickelback.
That's
we
such had an uncle
Papa
playlist.
Roach. Yeah. Then we had some Eminem. We had some Jay-Z. It was just such a conglomerate of like weird music together. Like it was weird, but I loved it. And I basically studied the entire list of music that he had given me. I had no concept of who these people were, what the genres were. It was like I'm 8 years old and I'm just listening and I'm enjoying it. And that's when I really started falling in love with rock, because rock, hands down, my favorite genre since I was really, really young. All forms of rock. I mean, from grunge to like early alternative rock into like indie rock now. Always been a huge influence for me. So I love the Purple iPod Nano origin story. I think that's something so random and unique that we share. Okay, so moving forward from that, I love how you talked about your journey producing, because that's something that's so important as women to get into and not be afraid of. I remember going into Frost, I had zero knowledge of production, and I was encouraged by one of our professors, Dean Ray Sanchez, to really delve into that world. And I started out learning on Logic freshman year, and now I've, you know, fully self-produced some of my projects. I love getting into the studio and co-producing with other producers and engineers, and it doesn't feel like this intimidating world for me anymore, but for a lot of women it can be. So how important is production to you in your creative process? And as a woman, how important is it for you to see other female producers and engineers?
Yeah, it's everything. It's everything. I think producing is so important as an independent artist, because it's one of the main things people try to take your money for. I can't tell you how many times I get approached by like people like selling beats and like trying to sell me beats that are like extremely generic, and they're like, you kind of sound like Summer Walker. Here's a Summer Walker type beat. And I'm like, cool, thanks. Yeah. But also, I'm an artist as well. Like, and I think it's so important for women to, like, female artists and non-binary artists to be producers as well, because one, it gives you way more control over what you sound like, which is also something people are constantly trying to take from us. And it helps you build a world for yourself. It helps you carve out your own niche. And I can't tell you how many independent female artists I like grew up with as well, like going to like camps and music programs and things like that, who could not produce and couldn't play an instrument and were so frustrated at not being able to release music the way that they wanted. Like, so for me in particular, I was like, I have to do this. Like, one, it's fun. Like, I was doing it on my phone and it felt like a little game. And then suddenly I was making cool stuff. Like, suddenly I really liked what I was making and I got to like be creative and expand my worldview. So it's everything to me.
Love that. I love that answer also. And when you said that they felt frustrated, that really struck a chord with me, because I think one of the things that gives you the most agency as a songwriter and as an artist is being able to do everything yourself, right? And I think that can be a very overwhelming barrier of entry for a lot of people. But really all you need to do is open up your computer. If you have a Mac, open up GarageBand. If you don't want to invest in Logic or go that route yet, just play around with it. Like, Jordy was doing this literally in high school on the subway. It's so accessible. And I think really the first and most important part is getting over the mental barrier. And then another resource that I like to use, this can be controversial in the production community, I get it, but this is for beginners, right? If you want a good place to start and just kind of get your hands dirty into production, go on Splice and get a membership. Get those beat packs, because genuinely that can be the building blocks that you need to get started. You don't need any sort of music knowledge, music theory, history in order to be a producer. And I think, you know, it's really important to have that knowledge. I also play instruments like Jordy. But at the same time, like, there's an accessibility now in music production and in the music space that was never there before. So take advantage of that. You know, you don't have to sell out stadiums your first week, right? Rome wasn't built in a day. So keep it pushing. Keep it Jasmine, you know?
Yes.
So my next question for you is, who in your life inspires you the most as an artist and as a person?
I would say and it's going to be a couple people, but like the people who inspire me the most are my friends from high school. And I feel like my mom would not like that answer. And like, I love my family and they're also so inspiring and they're my rock always. But I feel like when I met my friends from high school, and they're from middle school because it was the same school. Two of them in particular that I'm thinking of have always been so unapologetically themselves and so authentic at all times, which is so incredibly difficult to do when you're 11. Because who even are you when you're 11 or 12 or 13? Middle school was like the worst, I think, for everybody for the most part. And it still really sucked for us. Right. It sucked in a lot of ways. That's just what it is. But they've always managed to be such pillars for me and the kinds of people I could look at who are like, this person does not give a single flying whatever. In a lot of ways, we all have self-doubt and we're all unsure and we're all trying to figure it out and we change and grow and adapt. And I think even through trying to figure out who they are or who they want to be, they've never been anything but, if that makes sense. And for me, especially trying to be fearless in my art and like trying to push my boundaries and get out of my comfort zone and make music I care about and that other people will care about and that I really feel deeply connected to, I can't apologize for being who I am. And I can't apologize for looking how I do. And I love how I look and I love who I am. And I think they are some of the people who have really helped me step into that and embody that. And I don't think I'd be where I am without them.
Wow, I love that answer. I think it's so beautiful that you said that. And that's also, I think, a unique perspective for people to acknowledge, because the people you grow up with can really help shape you. Mm. And I do believe 100% it takes a village, whether that's from like your parents' perspective, where it takes a village to raise a child. It also takes a village to grow up. It takes a community. Mm. And that sense of community can help you find your own sense of self and find a place in that community. You know, you're one of my best friends from college. I love how close we've always been. You know, you single-handedly got me through some of the most difficult times of my life, especially through college. So I really value and appreciate that. And I think you can find so much inspiration from your peers if you allow yourself to remove ego from the equation. Mm. Because I think there's so much of a comparison game when it comes to people of the same age.
I love our friendship so much, and I always adore you. And I'm glad that we also have the kind of friendship that, like, we uplift each other and inspire each other.
1000% always. I adore you. So my next question for you, you got me cheesing over here. My next question is, what do you feel is your greatest skill set?
I think my greatest skill set is being kind, which sounds like not related to it, but being an independent artist, a lot of it is being able to connect with people. And yes, I can say, like, I think producing is my strongest skill set. I think, like, my vocal production is really good, which I do. I'll toot my own horn on that. But like songwriting,
as you should.
And all, yeah, like all these skills that I've like built and been educated on, I think they are my greatest skill sets. But I also think that it doesn't matter how good your music are, how good your music is, if you're not a good person. And if you're not the kind of person that people want to work with. From middle school on, I did meet a lot of artists and worked with people my age and a little bit older or younger, who had the ideas and they had the drive, but they were not good people. Like, or they were just not the kind of people that I connected with, and they had an ego or they had a lot of pride. And I remember there was one program that I did where Yvette Noel Shore, Beyonce's publicist, came and gave us a talk. And she had said that one of the most important things for her, especially in the industry and like being a woman in the industry and a Black woman in the industry, is just knowing how to be a nice person, and it'll take you far. And I feel like hearing that, it really helped me. So yeah, no, I think my greatest skill set is just that I care about people, about people's work, and I respect people. And for me, I'm always like, if you give me 100%, like, I'm always going to give 100%, and I expect the same back. And I expect authenticity, yeah. And I expect honesty, and I will always hold myself to those standards. And I want the people that I work with to also hold themselves to that standard. Yeah. Honesty, yes. Kindness.
I love that.
Thanks.
I love that. And I think that's really what sets you apart as someone who's talented and humble. What is your music making process like? I know we talked a little bit about production, but I really want to get into the songwriting element. So where do you start? What do you begin with? And what tips do you have for upcoming artists?
Yeah. So for me, there are a couple of tried and true ways that I have done that really work for me. I would say I'm going to talk about like two, because I feel like those are the ones I use most of the time. It is either there's something that I'm going through or an experience that I've had that I feel like I want to release or talk about, and I'll just write like a page or two of like a diary entry, like, or like on Google Docs or like on my phone on the train. Is where I get a lot of work done on the train. And then I'll go back after I just do like full train of thought, and I'll pick out words or phrases that really resonated with me that I was feeling in the moment. And I'll go through and I'll circle them, and then I'll put them in a different document, and I'll just kind of work through those. And I feel like that has been a really good way for me to like connect back into myself with a lot of my songs. I think there's a few of them that I've done that way that I think just kind of helps put it all into perspective. Another way that I start a song is by writing it on top of another song. And I feel like it sounds really dangerous copyright wise, but like for me, it's all like a song that really just sparks my interest. Or sometimes it'll be like, I go to a concert of an artist I really like or that I don't know, and I'll hear a song and be like, this just hits my chest. Like something about it, I just really connect to. And then I'll open up my phone, I'll go on like Notes or Google Docs and start writing a song on top of that song. And for me, I feel like it helps to give myself rules in that way. So it'll have the same structure of like verse, pre-chorus, chorus. There might be a bridge later, and like same time and tempo. And then from there, I can do whatever I want. So I'll rip it apart. I'll like put it in Logic. I'll pick an entirely new chord progression in a different key. I'll pick new melodies. I'll pick new rhythms. But I, on a bunch of songs I've done this with, I'll always have like song title and then my lyrics. And then in parentheses, I'll put like, I was listening to this song, so I kind of know where it started, and also so that I can make sure I didn't accidentally take anything from the original. And so far, yeah. I haven't. Like, I've poured over all of these, but I feel like as a songwriter, and if anybody listening like wants different ways to do that, when you give yourself rules, it's so fun breaking them later. And I feel like it's a really good way to get out of your head and just kind of free flow, see what happens, and then totally mess it up later.
I think that's very applicable in all of music, especially as people who've been sort of classically trained as musicians. You know, I started out piano when I was 3. I started on guitar when I was 9. You started on guitar really young, and piano and production as well. We have that understanding of music theory. We know what the laws of music are. But at the same time, the more that you learn those rules, the more you have freedom to go outside of that convention. Another tip that was given to us by our songwriting professor, Craig Carruthers at UM, was if you give yourself limitations, that gives you more freedom. What I mean by that is you're not feeling overwhelmed by an amount of choices, an endless amount of opportunity or option. I want to talk a little bit more about what motivates you to keep going, because in the music business world, it can feel so difficult to get an edge. Where do you see yourself going in these next steps with your upcoming release?
Yeah. I feel like I always have this running joke that I tell people that I'm not good at anything else. And that's what keeps me going. I don't necessarily believe that's true. But no, I think what keeps me going is how much this sounds corny, but I love music. Music is my first love. I've always been in love with it. It has been the only way I have been able to communicate, really. Like, I've always felt like having trouble expressing my emotions and mental health and like things like that. It was so hard for me to verbalize those when I was younger, because one, I felt like my family didn't talk about those kinds of things a lot. Music was the only place, and I say place because it really felt like I was building a world when I was creating music. It was the only place where I felt like I could be 100% myself all the time. And I could say what I wanted, and I could speak how I wanted, and I didn't have to code switch or be polite or not curse or like feeling like I had to have these restrictions on myself that I did in my daily life. It's what has made me who I am, and it's what has made me so comfortable now expressing myself to people and like growing into myself. But I don't think I would be who I am if I wasn't making music and being creative.
Hey, my name is Jordy Polycarp. I'm a recording artist coming to you live from NYC. Here's a snippet from my upcoming release, J'adore. Thank you for having me on the show. Keep it Jasmine. It wouldn't take much for me to J'adore.
What I know is that I have to keep going, because I think I'd be very disappointed in myself if I could go into the future and like me at 35 or me at 40, it's like, I don't do it anymore. Like, not even for fun, not even as a hobby. I'd be like, who are you? I don't recognize you. Like, so for me, it doesn't even matter in terms of like what it can give me or could eventually give me financially or business wise, but it is the very fiber of my being. So I kind of have to. And also, I'm not good at anything else. So that is why.
I definitely have the same feeling. It's like, what do you mean? What motivates me? Like, I'd have to do this. Like, there isn't an option. Okay. Yeah. It's who you are. And this profession is not for the weak, right? This is so hard, emotionally, vulnerability wise, financially. Busting down those barriers is so difficult. But when you get even a little bit ahead, it fills you with so much joy and hope and fulfillment. This is a passion-based industry, and you have to love it to really succeed in it. Okay, so we're going to hear from another one of our sponsors, take a quick little commercial break. My name is Jasmine Ortiz. You're listening to The Jasmine Ortiz Show on 99.7 The Heat Miami. We're here with independent recording artist Jordy Polycarp. We're going to go in depth on our topic of body image in just a minute now.
Don't be like old me. Old me had no idea what she was going to eat for breakfast every day and often struggled to make that difficult choice. But now, with Oats Overnight, I never have to think twice about what I'm going to eat in the morning. Oats Overnight allows me to spend less than 2 minutes each night to prep breakfast for the next day. It even helps me meet my protein goals by including 20 grams of protein per packet. Seriously, guys, this is a no-brainer. When I'm on tour, Oats Overnight is my go-to every single morning. When I'm worrying about running around doing hair, makeup, prepping for a show, I don't have time to make breakfast. So just going to the fridge, eating something that's yummy and nutritious makes me feel good and ready to take on my shows. Oats Overnight come in a variety of flavors, including my favorite, which is caramel cold brew, and things like blueberry cobbler, maple pancakes, chocolate chip cookie dough, and more. You also have the option to choose if you want it to be more like a protein shake by adding more milk to the mixture, or you can eat it with a spoon if you add a little bit less. This is Jasmine Ortiz on 99.7 DeHeat Miami on iHeartRadio. Now I want to walk you through how you can make oats overnight at home. What you have to do is go on Amazon and order your starter pack. It'll give you a variety of flavors to choose from and your very own oats overnight blender bottle. Next, you're going to choose your favorite flavor, rip open the pack, and pour it into the blender bottle. Then you can pour in your milk of choice up to the 8-ounce line that's already marked for you. Now all you have to do is mix it together, pop it in the fridge, and the next morning, breakfast is all ready to go. With oats overnight, you can make breakfast fit your lifestyle. Now back to our regular scheduled programming on 99.7 DeHeat Miami, officially a part of iHeartRadio. Hey guys, welcome back. You're here with Jasmine Ortiz and Jordy Polycarp on The Jasmine Ortiz Show. We're here to talk to you about a super important topic that we covered a little bit earlier on in the show. But right now, we want to delve into some specifics of how this topic influences different aspects of our lives. Body image comes in all different forms, whether it's positive or negative, whether it's internal, whether it's something that other people are putting onto you societally, but it also impacts intrinsically so many things in our lives. We already kind of talked about early 2000s and the media and that role in body image, but now I really want to talk about how it impacts fashion, mental health, and dating. And this is something that Jordy brought up to me as a super important topic for her, because she's having different experiences dating as a young woman in New York City. Jordy, I want to talk to you first about fashion and how, you know, the plus size fashion industry has evolved a lot, but how do you think it's impacted body image, both for better and for worse?
Earlier, when I had mentioned Ashley Graham, I think she was a huge part of this and that movement when she was like first added as a plus size model for Victoria's Secret. I think that fashion is a huge part of how women are meant to see themselves and how we create spaces for ourselves. It's in everything because the female body is so vast and it exists on a spectrum. And unfortunately, the fashion industry hasn't quite been able to catch up. I think nowadays, for me, especially as a plus size woman and trying to buy clothing and go into like trusted brands and size inclusive brands. And especially for like trying to be in the music industry and pick clothing that fits correctly and that works for music video, having a hard time because I'm like, I can't find anything. Like you can kind of try to vet different companies and brands and things like that. But I think just most of the fashion industry hasn't really caught up. But
and
I do
also
think
it's so expensive too.
It's so expensive.
It's so expensive. And it's crazy how, you know, plus size fashion has been marketed as like a luxury item space.
Yes.
When in reality, it's literally just a necessary thing in society.
I can't tell you the brands
like, what is that
I've
about?
Seen. Dude, like the stores, you'll like walk in, I'm like, why are these jeans $150? When like, not that straight sizing doesn't have expensive jeans and things like that, but like the main plus size stores that have existed for like our mothers and things like that are still selling $150 jeans. And like trying to buy shoes that fit like bigger calves in particular also is a huge thing when
oh
like,
my god, like the knee-high boots, thigh-high boots.
Yes.
Oh, I have had issues with that. Like I'm in straight sizing, but I will not lie to you, like I got thick thighs.
Mm-hmm.
And these thighs do not want to fit
in thigh-high boots. Not only that, I'm short, which just adds insult to injury.
Same.
So it's like they're either like up to my freaking waist and will not go over my thighs, or they're like they're ridiculously big up my calves and just like completely the same size all the way around, but still always too tall. Like mm-hmm. there's just no good, there's no good medium there.
There's no good medium. Yeah, especially being, I'm 5'3", so that's a big part of it.
I'm 5'2", girl, yeah.
That's a huge part of it, too. And then when it comes to plus sizing as well, I have a more hourglass body, and plus sizing, or, like, regular stores that will have their straight sizing and then added plus sizing are like, oh, let's just take this pair of jeans that was made for a size 2 and stretch it out horizontally and change nothing else. And they don't understand that when you have a bigger body, that also comes with different assets and different shapes. And when you have brands like, actually, let me not talk bad about brands that exist, but when you have certain brands that are pushing the BBL body, I'm like, well, the thighs don't match. So you cannot make these jeans for quote unquote plus size women or people with bigger assets and then keep everything else exactly the same except for the butt. It just doesn't work. The proportions, mm-hmm. they don't work. I have always had a hard time. Like any store that I go to, I could buy anywhere from a size 8 to a size 16, depending on the store and the type of clothing and the material.
So we've come to the conclusion that fashion, you need sucks. To wake up. You need to like get your stuff together, because we deserve to have pants that fit our bodies mm-hmm. comfortably. Especially like summer's coming up. Jean shorts are my absolute like Achilles heel.
Shorts.
Jean shorts. Oh my God. Okay. So I think jean shorts are cute. I like them visually. They have never worked on my body ever.
Mm-mm.
Ever. Like it's either that I have like cheek hanging out, or they're like so like big on me that I need a belt. And it's like there is no middle ground. I've quite literally never found jeans that I can both feel coverage and sit down in, and then like also look good standing up.
Oh,
those
yeah.
are completely different things. Sitting and standing, like we need to talk about that. That's
if
a difference.
If anyone has ever heard the phrase, these are my standing jeans. If those are your standing jeans, you're probably a plus size woman or some version of a plus size woman, because I
or curvy
can't tell
or like
you,
not, yeah. it's not working.
I can't tell you. I have my standing jeans and I have my sitting jeans, and they will never be the same pair of jeans.
There's a lot to work on there, and you know, we're not going to solve it in a day. Let's move on to body image and dating and how, you know, that whole conversation has kind of existed, because something that we talked about before about the hypersexualization of, you know, people of color, that also directly plays into body image and dating.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of your experiences with that? Because I know I've had like assumptions be made about hypersexualization because I'm a Latina, and especially from like men who aren't Latinos, like you can get that a lot. And that sort of rhetoric also exists towards Black women.
Yeah. I think we're definitely in the same boat. Black and brown women have always been hypersexualized or maternalized, as we talked about earlier, depending on your body type. And there's never much of an in-between. And that, unfortunately, that always extends to dating. And again, this is if you're a woman who dates men. So depending on orientations, and I also date women as well. But when it comes to men and the ways that they put us in categories, it really manifests itself in dating. I think I remember there were a couple studies from like 2010s, and I think they've done redos of these, and it still holds true, that the least desired categories of people on dating apps are Black women and Asian men. And unfortunately, the reasons,
wow.
yeah, we all know that the
we're
reasons
stereotypes.
Are stereotypes, and they're really unfortunate. And then what ends up being, what I've seen happening a lot of the time is they end up dating each other nowadays. Especially, I live in Queens.
Okay,
and there's
go
a lot
off
of
slay.
Us.
Like,
yeah, like I've seen, I can't tell you how many times I've been to like the Queens Night Market, and there's Black women, Asian men, couples everywhere. And it's really unfortunate that we have been feeling that as a community, especially as we get older. My cousins and aunt have stressed so much, like, try to date now because, like, you don't want to be in your 30s or entering your 40s and single. And I'm like, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there's a lot of power that comes into knowing yourself and continuing to keep your standards. But I think especially dating as a plus-sized woman of color, I've had some positive experiences and I have had quite a few negative experiences. But I think at least both of those things, being plus-sized and being a Black woman, are extremely obvious. I cannot hide them very clearly. And I've never tried to. And I think it does a good job of weeding certain kinds of people out who either would have never dated you in the first place or who are trying to, like, prove them something to themselves in dating you and then realizing that they are never gonna, like, take you home to their mother or anything of the sort.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think we've had similar experiences with that.
That is such a specific type of pain, like not meeting family expectations of a partner because of, like, race or body type. You know, I had a personal experience with this, and growing up in the Northeast, this was something that I felt was more prevalent up there. Like, I live in Miami now, and I'm definitely in the majority here. A lot of people here look like me. A lot of people have backgrounds like me. Most people are bilingual. So I don't feel any of the animosity or otherness that I felt growing up. And at one point, I was seeing a guy. He was a white guy from the Northeast. And he told me that he could not tell his grandmother that I was Latina. Like, he had to lie and say that I wasn't his girlfriend because, like, on Facebook photos and whatever that she had seen. Because I was Latina and that wouldn't be cool with her. And I was just like, whoa. And his family was, like, overall, like, very left-leaning. His immediate family. But then they were totally okay with the fact that, like, grandma and grandpa and uncle and aunt, like, were not. And they did not care about confronting that bias at all. And he told me this casually. He was just like, yeah, I had to lie to grandma, like, about who you were. I said you were just a friend. And I was like,
that's insane.
I was horrified to the point that I've literally asked current or recent partners, like, do your parents know that I'm Latina?
Yes.
Like, actually, that is a conversation that I've had. The fact that you even have an experience in the past that has made you need to ask that question in the future is just, like, that leaves a mark. It really does.
It's insane. I think about this a lot, especially being a Black person. I'm like, no matter who I end up with or whose DNA ends up being part of my child, that kid's gonna be Black. Whatever variation on the color spectrum, this child is gonna be Black. And, like, my hair is natural and textured, and they're gonna have probably some variation of that. And to the point where if I'm dating somebody who's not Black, I'm like, I need to know. Because it's not even just about me anymore. Like, I know that kids are something that I want in my future. And I always want to make sure that if, even when I have kids, their grandparents or their extended family on that other person's side, I do not want to bring them for Thanksgiving and have them say negative things to my kid. And if they do, I'll be fighting somebody's mother if I need to.
Yeah.
Like, I will always be protecting
absolutely
my kids against
that. Something that we talked about was, like, the clean girl, soft girl aesthetic, like, how those things interact. Because 9 times out of 10, when you see a clean girl aesthetic video on TikTok, or you see someone being coquette, or someone showing off a luxury handbag collection, that person is usually not a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
So those spaces can feel very exclusive, and they can feel like they're not intended for certain audiences. And how does that make you feel? How does that make you want to interact in those spaces or not?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely been a huge conversation I've had with a lot of my female friends of color, and especially my Black friends, that, like, the clean girl aesthetic. I'm like, first of all,
The name of it, I don't even like.
I don't like the name. And also, every picture, every, like, GIF set I've seen of it is so uncomfortable. I feel like TikTok is a huge proponent of this, too. I saw, like, what was it? The different types of pretty. And they'll be like, oh, these kind of girls are girl pretty, and these kind of girls are boy pretty. And all of the girl pretty girls were white women, and all of the boy pretty girls were black and brown women. And I was like,
you really, where's the implicit bias coming from?
You posted that and
you said
and
that with your whole chest, girl.
You said these women look masculine. And they're all women of color. And it's very
also
rude.
I think it's like saying they're only pretty to the male gaze, but not the female gaze.
Yes. Which is
and that's
so
weird
odd.
To me too, because then you're like innately sexualizing us to say like only men will think we're pretty because they want to sexualize us.
Yeah.
Not because we're just pretty in like a model girly girl sense.
Yeah, no. They're saying that we look pretty, but like not as pretty as them.
Yeah.
There's also like all of the trends that have been like renamed as other things. Or my like
or the
my
brownie lips.
Brownie lips.
Which brownie have been lips. Like so typically like a Latina like chola style from the West Coast, or like black and brown women have been doing that for so long. Or the hoops with the slicked back bun, girl. Where did you see that first?
And then suddenly,
did you go to Miami and see that? Because
exactly.
I think I have
the hoops with the slicked back bun, and they're like what is it, workplace siren? I'm like, no, it's not. It's a black
clean girl
with
aesthetic,
glasses. Like, it's very weird. And then all the way down to like different hair trends. And like, do you remember at the time where they were calling edges sticky bangs? Yeah, okay.
I have never seen that. Oh my God.
There was this, I think
sticky
it started with this
bangs?
One girl, but yeah, just generally, like, there was
tell
a minute.
Tell me you've never
where,
left the house without telling me you've never left the house.
Tell me you've never left the Midwest without saying you've never left the Midwest. I was shocked. And I was shocked.
Yeah.
And first of all, everybody has edges. They're baby hairs. Sometimes you have damage. Sometimes your hair just grows like that. Like, they're there always, right? But, like, black women started, like, slicking them down and things like that. And then I would see these, like, very, like, skinny, weird-looking edges, quote-unquote. And then they were
you mean
they
sticky
were, like,
bangs,
my,
right?
My sticky bangs.
Sticky bangs.
First of all, terrible name. Terrible name. I'm still not over it. I'm still mad about it. And then, like, what was it? People were called, when the Kardashians were wearing, like, cornrows, first of all. That's what they were. Unfortunately, there's been so many instances of this in the fashion industry and through social media. The, like, reclaiming and renaming of trends and aesthetics that were created by women of color that unfortunately extended to other things.
I think there's something to be said about being influenced and inspired by a culture versus like adopting and reappropriating.
Mm-hmm.
When black women wear hair in protective or natural styles, they can be demonized for it. Whereas you see a white woman wearing the exact same style
and it's
high
trendy.
Fashion.
Yeah.
It's trendy. It's not about necessarily like the influence, it's about the lack of understanding between the difference of how people are treated wearing their hair like that.
Exactly.
And I think that's the biggest like cognitive dissonance there. I love this discussion. I think it's so important to highlight not only like the body image perspective, but just our individual experiences. And so many things came up throughout this conversation that I didn't expect to touch upon, but I think are super important for other people who might be relating to this, you know? I want to take a quick commercial break and then we'll get back into it with some advice for you guys. If you're like me, your mom did not let you drink soda growing up. You remember the struggle of trying to get it at the supermarket and not being able to, all because it had too much sugar. Now, there's an option for those of us who want to cut down on our sugar intake, but not compromise on flavor or the fun of a fizzy drink. Introducing Olipop, the soda that your mom would actually let you bring home. It only has 2 to 5 grams of sugar per can and 9 grams of fiber. I mean, come on, you cannot go wrong with something with so many health benefits. And it has amazing prebiotics that help soothe your digestive system. Olipop comes in all the classic flavors that we know and love, like vintage cola, root beer, and cream soda. It even has more adventurous flavors, like cherry vanilla, banana cream, tropical punch, and watermelon lime. I love getting to try all the different Olipop flavors, knowing that I'm not compromising on my health to have a fun treat. Try Olipop if you're looking for something to spice up your lunchtime, and surprise your mom with a healthy soda that you know she'll love. Okay, so this last segment is probably going to be one of my other favorites on the show. This is our community corner. So we have gotten some submissions of questions to answer for you guys anonymously regarding any sort of topic, from career advice to dating to friendships to conflict to falling out, any of the above under that umbrella. We are here for you, girlies and the guys. We want to answer your questions. So feel free to reach out to me via DM. I'll be posting polls every week on my Instagram at @IamJasmineOrtiz. So our questions for today. This first question, what do you do when talking to someone and it's going really well, but then you feel their energy shift? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, do I hate this. This is probably one of my biggest icks when talking to someone in dating in general. Everything's going well. Maybe you've been talking 2-3 weeks, you've gone on several dates, you're hanging out at each other's places a couple nights a week. Like, things are going great for all intents and purposes. And then the minute, quite literally, no, the second that you start showing the tiniest bit of emotional connection, the person completely turns the other way. I think this is a tale as old as time, at least a tale as old as Gen Z, because that's been happening since the dawn of Snapchat and social media, at the very least.
Yeah.
I think it's an issue with connectivity and commitment, wherein especially like guys who are dating girls want this level of emotional intimacy without commitment that you just shouldn't be able to have, honestly.
Which is normal.
I feel like this has happened to me at least like 3 times. Separate occasions where it's like the minute I catch feelings, out the door, mm-hmm. turning the other way and running. And it's because I think they're scared of genuinely forming that emotional bond. And instead of wanting a girlfriend, they want a therapist who can also provide the role of a mom slash wife. I don't know. Like, I didn't answer the question. I didn't answer what you do in that situation, but I just talked about it. So Jordy, if you have an answer, please share.
Leave. I think, yeah, no, dump him, leave, block him. Okay, hold on, let me. So I think it's 100% scared of commitment. I think sometimes they found somebody they like better, which is also unfortunate and sucks. And sometimes they don't even let you know that they were seeing anybody else. Sometimes they've gone over certain boundaries that you set. Sometimes it is that, I think also as a woman of color or as a plus size woman or both, they got scared and they realized that maybe you aren't the type of person that they originally saw themselves with, or the type of person that the people around them think they should be with. And then I think that's also a reason why sometimes the energy will shift. They get uncomfortable, they get scared, and they don't know how to communicate that properly. So they just kind of slowly start pulling back and like breadcrumbing and things like that. And I would say, honestly, someone who really cares about you and respects you will be there for you and won't have that kind of shift. And if they do, they'll work through it. They'll realize that, okay, I'm pulling back, but I'm self-sabotaging. Maybe I should change my behavior. And they will. And if they don't, forget about it. I would say set a time frame. Maybe like, hey, I've noticed you doing this. If they don't change within like a week or two, move on.
Whatever your personal boundary is, set it, stick by it, and leave. Because if it's not getting better by week 2 or month 2, it's never going to get to that point. And I think whenever I've actually gotten into a relationship with someone, it has not been hard. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't be this like series of games and mind tricks and what ifs and guessing. It is not like that at all. If someone's down for you and they want you, they will let you know, period.
Yeah.
So it's just like, don't even bother. Don't waste your time. Okay. One last question for this week, and it's kind of related to what we just talked about. How do you get over being ghosted? And for me, it took me years to get over some of these crusty dusties. It took me years. So I don't know if I'm the best example of this, but getting over being ghosted really comes when you focus on yourself again and you move past whatever the obsession or, you know, appeal was with this one person. So my experience with getting ghosted, one time it was really bad because the next like 2 weeks later, this person had a girlfriend already lined up. So I think it was what Jordy said, where he found someone else along the way of us seeing each other that he felt was a better fit for him. I mean, obviously that hurts. That sucks. Moving on from that situation, I think took a lot of like internal work. It took self-love because I had to learn that it wasn't really my fault. There wasn't a reason. There wasn't anything that I could have done to make him not do that. There wasn't something that I should have said to make him stay. If someone doesn't want to stay, if they want to cheat, if they want to leave, they are going to do that regardless of anything that you do or say.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it really does come down to, like you said, like self-love and like being comfortable with yourself in order to get over that. And I think when it comes to, I think ghosting is a very stupid, immature thing. I think that people who do it just don't know how to communicate properly, don't think it's important, or just it makes them uncomfortable, so they don't bother. And if you know yourself as a young woman, you deserve better. Don't even worry about it. They just weeded themselves out, and they're going to make it a lot easier for you to find somebody who just fits for you and respects you and adores you in the way that you deserve. And I think for me, the times that I hadn't like really experienced ghosting until like later into college or even recently post-college. I was like, why are you still doing this at 24? But I think that it really, for me, how I got over it was just kind of like, I kind of already knew it wasn't working out. Like, I don't think I've ever really been ghosted out of the blue. Not that that can't happen, because some people will love bomb you and sweetie you to death and talk your ear off and then disappear. But I do think that sometimes it's just not working and the chemistry is off, or if you don't feel 100% comfortable with the person, like, there's always, I think at least for me, little telltale signs that, like, this person is not it for me. Definitely not. And I deserve better. And also, being single is not a bad thing. Like, being by yourself, not a bad thing. And it's actually really fun and gives me way less headaches than dating. So just do what's right for you and never be afraid to remove yourself from a situation that's not working. And if they remove themselves, you don't have to do any work.
Even better. There you go. Yeah. I love giving you guys advice like this because I relate so heavily to these situations. I mean, we literally just described instances where we had personal experience with this, and that just goes to show how common this behavior is and how we're all just going through it. We're just girls, you know, we're figuring it out, and we're just girls. And it's important to normalize the pain that's involved with that, because your feelings are valid. And whether you knew someone for 2 weeks intimately or 2 months, it still stings. And you can still look back at yourself and be like, did I do something wrong? And the answer is, girl, you did not. Like, pat yourself on the back for surviving that and move on to greener pastures. So that is the end of our first episode. Oh my goodness. Yay. I am so excited to be here launching this platform with you guys. Once again, my name is Jasmine Ortiz. This is my lovely co-host, Jordy Polycarp. And we're here on the Jasmine Ortiz Show on 99.7 The Heat Miami, officially syndicated with iHeartRadio. Please check us out on all streaming platforms. We'll be on Spotify, Apple Music, all of the above. This video version of the podcast will be available on YouTube, and you can find out more about our daily lives and our artistry on Instagram at I am Jasmine Ortiz. And where can they find you, Jordy?
You can find me on everything at Jordy Polycarp, JORDIPOLYCARPE.
Awesome. Jordy Polycarp on all social media platforms. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll have more for you next week on the Jasmine Ortiz Show. Make sure that you be yourselves this week and keep it Jasmine.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.